Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are on paper 44, section 4, which is old single column, page 503. All right, so if you were here last session, you recall that as we were moving into the Celestial Artisan's paper, it starts very much in a mode that even though the archangel told us that he's very much distorting and perverting things to try to express facts that are so transcendent of anything that we can even remotely imagine, nonetheless, we felt that we must have some understanding when he started talking about things like celestial musicians. You know, in the first section, that seemed like something that sounds like a celestial artisan. And in the heavenly reproducers, you know, it was still seemingly pretty close at hand, at least the way he presented it. So we had the producers, remember, and then the reproducers. But then when we got to section 3, it started to strike us as not so immediately what we would think of as something that's like a celestial orchestra phenomenon. Something that we would immediately think of using words like harmony to describe. You know, so let's remind ourselves again. That is the most important fact in play. There isn't any difference in quality between any of these seven groups in terms of how transcendently magnificent, you know, what a poem of glory is being manifested. That, you know, to try to somehow imagine the unimaginable, that the way you build buildings is just as transcendent as the way you might imagine the celestial hosts would produce music. Now, it does help a little bit, you know, that that you're literally building those buildings out of spirit substance. You know, they're molding the walls and the floors and the furniture and what have you out of literal spirit substance. That at least puts it in more in the realm of, well, I don't know what spirit substance is like. I've never stubbed my toe on it. I can't even remotely see it yet. I'm so primitive and immature right now, but I would imagine it would be very cool, a substance that somehow immediately embodies unity, in contrast to the substance that I think I'm starting to know something about, like what the arm of this couch is made out of, material substance that directly embodies individuality. But the challenge, you know, continues as we move into these next couple sections here. Again, to try to never let your mind think, oh, this is prosaic. You know, to keep that challenge on yourself so that maybe, despite all of the corruption that the archangel tells us is in the immediacy of the words on these pages, and you know, you might be open to some semblance of the truth that your mind might begin to resonate in relationship to such incomprehensible things. So let's jump in here, and we'll just, you know, take them one block at a time and think about what's in play. You'll notice as we start out the thought recorders here, it isn't quite so prosaic sounding. So that'll kind of help us to get started in the right mode, and then we'll see if we can continue that through all seven sub-items here with this type of celestial artisan. All right.
Section 4, the thought recorders. These artisans are devoted to the preservation and reproduction of the superior thought of their realms, and they function in seven groups. 1. Thought preservers. These are the artisans dedicated to the preservation of the higher thought of the realms. On the Marantia worlds, they truly treasure the gems of mentation. Before first coming to Urantia, I saw records and heard broadcasts of the ideation of some of the great minds of this planet. Thought recorders preserve such noble ideas in the tongue of Uversa.
All right, so let's get ourselves in the proper frame here. Notice first of all, they're not called thought conservers. They're called thought preservers. So another great opportunity to remind yourself again of why the Latins coined the triplet of terms. You have preserve, observe, conserve. Despite what almost everyone does these days and uses preserve and conserve as synonyms, I mean, they're closer to opposites. And the fact that they're related to opposite directions in time. Preserve is looking to the past, observe is looking to the present, and conserve is looking to the future. When you hear someone use the word conserve or conservative or something like that, where they're talking about something in the past, they don't know the language. They're completely abusing that word. And then on top of it, you've got people who call themselves conservationists, that you listen to what they are attempting to do, and they don't know what the word conservation means. They're thinking preservation. You know, they want to pour epoxy over forests and try to preserve them eternally. You know, they don't have any concept of the evolutionary process and the truth of that forest moving forward in time. That's conservation. Not the fact of the forest, the truth of the forest. But here, you see, they're purposely speaking to preservers. These are elements that are in the past and have been preserved just as they were in the past. Not augmented in any way, not being tweaked along forward into the future, but preserved as they were precisely at whatever time in the past that they manifested. And again, remind yourself why paper 44 is a pair of paper, is in a pair of papers with paper 43, the constellation Lovell. That fundamental core of the Marantia domain of the local universe. And that artificial substance, that is Marantia substance, what is it? It's this heterogeneous weaving of physical energy and spiritual energy. It's in some way manifesting a superadditive consequence of the relationship between the individuality of physical energy and the unity of spiritual energy. It's like mind made substance. So when you think about preserving thoughts, think about how unimaginably immediate this must be, that you take a thought form, a literal form in the mind energy system, and you can copy it into Marantia substance. And then in some more transcendent way, into the spirit substance that they're also working with, that is in some way, like we've talked about, a homogeneous blending of physical and spiritual energy. It's an absonite blend as opposed to a finite blending, like that heterogeneous weaving of the two. They are no longer distinguishable as two separate energies within, say, the body of a seraphim, when they're homogeneously blended like that. And you call that a spirit body, but it's not pure spirit energy. So, see, in both ways, you know, they're working with Marantia and spirit substance, and they're going to preserve thoughts. All right, and you know, so they start out just in kind of a simple sense of thinking of a thought form. When they say thought preserver, when they say gems of mentation, but they take it up a notch. And notice how they say, how the archangel says, before first coming to your rancha, I saw records and heard broadcasts of the ideation of some of the great minds of this planet. Okay, so as we've seen in the previous groups of celestial artisans, we're talking about them capturing things in a full reality, not just the actuality. But when you go to just the actuality of a thought form to the reality of it, you know, as the revelators remind us, the proper definition of the word idea, a word that we've never known the definition of until the revelation, ideas, like in the sense of a thought form that comes in through your senses, pardon the pun, in the sense of, but, you know, that thought form, that sensation, ideas are sensations plus the reflective interpretations of a personal self, right? A personal self, the realityization. So they're preserving the full reality, the not just the form, but the patterned form that personalities have imposed upon those thought forms. So in that fullness, these things are being preserved. And they're being preserved in the tongue of Yuversa, as they say there, because even more than the local universe tongue, as we'll see here in the next paragraph, the tongue of Yuversa is a fully non-linear tongue, language. You know, it's much more the full non-linear nature of your mind activity directly, as opposed to some sort of downstepping, some sort of linearization of those more holistic thought forms. You know, in the tongue of Yuversa, you're expressing it much more directly. Whereas right now, I've got, you know, a relatively non-linear thought form, and I'm having to do this very complicated process of translating that down into a string of words, you know, that literally jiggle air molecules, make my tongue wag and my lips move and jiggle air molecules and then make your eardrum jiggle. And, you know, it's been very crudely linearized, you know, but to not have to do that, to not have to downstep it like that, to flatten it like that, you know, think about the difference between just monaural and stereo music. Now, which sounds 3D and which sounds flat, 2D? Right? See, so they're preserving that full three-dimensional glory, beauty, of those gems of mentation. See, obviously they chose gems because they want you to think beauty. That thought form, they look at it and it's beautiful. And it doesn't matter if it comes from some primitive human. They've transcended their lowly nature. It's beautiful, and it gets preserved.
So, where are they getting these from? Are you telling me that this sort of sounds to me like every thought that everybody ever had is being recorded somewhere?
No, not quite. Remember, you asked a similar question to that, I mean, just recently here. Remember how the thing they're not talking about constantly throughout all this is we have the whole angelic hierarchy that are recording and putting into the communication grid that which is worthy of being communicated. Right? And so these artisans are picking that up out of the communication grid. But not every one of my thoughts is being pumped into the communication grid. Probably none of them are worthy of being put into the communication grid. But, you know, they tell you point blank that if I were to somehow form a conformal thought, a thought that conformed to the cosmos, that would be picked up, and the rest of the universe of universe could possibly benefit from that. Right, so things are afoot, and in terms of, you know, the thoughts that are there, I mean, if guardian angels looking at me, they can see every one of my thought forms, you know, and most of them are grotesque, like they pointed out. Most of what we do is, in the grand scheme of things, not a gem. It's grotesque, you know. In fact, it's grotesque. Yes, in truth, long-term truth, you know, it has value. But they're looking for the things that, not just in truth, but in fact, are beautiful and not grotesque. They're a gem. They're going to be preserved. You know, the fact of them is going to be preserved. You know, and they're not just going to be playing off of the truth of that thought. All right, so see, that's the kind of domain we're in. It's, you know, it's going to be incredible when we have this greater three-dimensional direct relationship to harmony. Remember, to have mode of consciousness is to be able to think harmony. We're a long ways from it. All right.
Could you say that the last section of the book, the Jesus papers, are a conservation one because they're rephrased in
modern phraseology? Yeah, see, definitely. There's no value in the preservation of what Jesus said. You know, what's valuable is the truth. And so they're going to rephrase it, they're going to use someone else's words. I mean, it's, you know, your first assumption is there aren't any words of Jesus there. I mean, there's certainly not any words in Aramaic or Greek, right, or something like that. I mean, obviously it isn't literally there. But the truth of what is there, you know, and so if at times when they want to remind you of that, where they aren't sort of like just using the words out of the Bible, say, you know, as a substitute for Jesus' words, you know, if the midwayer is sort of just completely reworking it, you know, you're trusting that midwayer can discern the truth of his words and then not use a single, you know, juxtaposed pair of words that he said, but completely rephrase it. Give you a different set of facts so that truth can still flow through those. If they gave you the exact transliteration, you know, of what he said, you wouldn't engage truth through those words. They would be dead facts. I mean, it's hard enough with the revelator's masterly construct of words for any of us to actually find the revelation through the words, to actually get to the truth, let alone if they're words that haven't been precisely attuned to our time, our minds, the current state of the Supreme, so that we might, maybe, just maybe, through great effort, strike step with a thread of truth that's flowing through some set of words in here, in the midst of all of our preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and longstanding prejudices. All right, so let's see what they say here. They use this as an opportunity to say a little bit about the two languages on high.
Each super universe has its own language, a tongue spoken by its personalities and prevailing throughout its sectors. This is known as the tongue of Uversa in our super universe. Each local universe also has its own language. All of the higher orders of Nebadon are bilingual, speaking both the language of Nebadon and the tongue of Uversa. When two individuals from different local universes meet, they communicate in the tongue of Uversa. If, however, one of them hails from another super universe, they must have recourse to a translator. In the central universe, there is little need of a language. There exists perfect and well-nigh complete understanding. There, only the gods are not fully comprehended. We are taught that a chance meeting on paradise reveals more of mutual understanding than could be communicated by a mortal language in 1,000 years. Even on Salvington, we know as we are known.
Well, speaking about using words of the Bible, you know, where are they pulling from with "know as we are known"? That's a famous enough chapter and one of Paul's epistles that you just might recognize that one. 1 Corinthians 13, anyone? Yeah. Greatest disease is love, you know that one? Yeah, right before that. Right, know as we are known. So playing off of that, remember how we saw that the archangel was trying to pull in a few biblical phrases that he found useful. Okay, so think about this this statement that if they're from local universes that are in different super universes, they must have recourse to a translator. Again, think about what's going on. You are very much you're there's no jiggling air molecules in any of this communication. You're engaging each other mindily. And so you have to be able to discern that mindal form in that other individual. And if that other individual is from a different super universe, mind in another super universe is just completely different. There's no overlap with any mind that's going on in this super universe in one of the other super universes. Remember what they tell you, you get to Havana, then you're going to experience difference. Wait till you meet someone from another super universe that's a completely disjoint, from a completely disjoint set from you. No overlap at all. Just so bizarrely different. You could never imagine something could be that different. Remember, the definition of spirit is completely different in each super universe. The sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. Their ceiling is completely separate from our ceiling in terms of matter, mind, spirit. And so the whole mind underneath that spirit ceiling is completely different. So there's just no common ground. There isn't even commonality of unity. Your unity doesn't even overlap, let alone your associativity or your individuality. So very, very different. When you're engaging in this immediate mind-to-mind way. And then when they comment about Havona there, in the central universe, not just Havona, but the whole central universe, there is little need of a language. There exists perfect and well-nigh complete understanding. Like what we were just talking about there. Literally, you walk up to someone and they just see your entire mind. Right? There's no, curtains in the way. There's no way to, you're just totally laid bare to just that person at eye level. Remember, it's that way right now. It's only me that can't see all your mind forms definitively. Anyone a little bit above me can look down the top and see all your mindal forms. They can read you like a book. There's no secrets in your consciousness. Probably not even to a secondary midware, let alone something like a seraphim or whatever. Right. So, right. I have such a primitive thought there. I'm so embarrassed by it. It's like, no, they've seen every primitive thought, for trillions of years. It's nothing new. Right. So remember, how do you get into Havona? You have to have completed, I shouldn't say completed, you have to have perfected that first consecration of will. You have to have perfect consecration of will in order to get into Havona. You have all kinds of consecration of mind yet to do. But, you've completed that consecration of your will to the perfect will of God the Father, so that you have perfection of purpose. You are just spot on. There is no room for oops in Havona. You have to follow the economy, the laws of the house, precisely to the letter, which means you have to have complete, perfect self-mastery of that mindal self. All right. Let's see, anything else there we want to bring up? No, let's just look at the, you know, they'll give us a little bit more here in the next paragraph. Oh, you got something here?
Yeah,
oh, something from the web? Okay.
Yeah, Chris, how does one start to think your truth or intact? Is it by philosophical means or to think more beautiful? What is the first step of thinking? An analogy, please.
Well, see, fortunately, the first step is given to you by grace. You have a potential, because of that initial encirclement in the Holy Spirit, if you avail yourself of that potential, if you supply the favorable conditions that you begin to touch upon the upper domain of your mind, that you can naturally begin to think in truth. You know, to say thinking in fact, you know, there's a lot of relativity to that. We have such limited ability to observe even yet. You know, our senses are so crude. Our awareness is so circumscribed. We can hardly hope for too much relationship to the cosmos in a way that's worthy to be called fact yet, but trust that you can begin, if you're humble and patient, in some measure of truth, and there will slowly begin to be some actual objective relationship to fact. You know, your first cosmic intuition will begin to focus in and grow. You will begin to distinguish fact from figment, even if you can't fully describe it, you know? Yeah, you can't fully analyze it and pick it apart yet, but you'll have that initial recognition of that's fact and that's not. It's starting as a tadpole, you know, like they tell you. Start as a tadpole that by grace can have some relationship in truth to the cosmos, and then slowly you'll mature. One day you won't be a child of God; you'll be an adult of God, and you'll be able to engage things in fact and not merely in truth. Just trust that that will happen over time, you know. And certainly, once you liberate yourself of the limitations of agitate mind and have Maranja mind. You know, that will start to happen in earnest, so that you know, before too many mansion rules roll by, you ought to be able to actually have mode of consciousness. And, you know, now the fact is just so present, so kind of naturally present. It isn't so remote. All right.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah,
before
yeah.
You want? Mm-hmm. Why do you think it is each super universe and each local universe has its own time?
The reason is, it's predicated on that fundamental fact, you know, why are there seven super universes? Why are there seven master spirits? It's because there's fundamentally seven different expressions of unity. We initially think of it in terms of taking the three infinite persons, you know, and recognizing that there's seven different relationships amongst those three, each one by themselves, the three pairs, and then the three together. But to recognize it goes beyond just a simple patterning of seven individuals from three individuals. You know, it has literally due to unity, the manifestation of unity. That's why they call them the master spirits. As opposed to, say, the masterminds. They are, the personalization of that sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. You have unity in its holistic form in the central universe, and then you downstep that into seven downstepped individuations of spirit unity. You know, that's why, you remember how they tell you, you don't even really begin your spirit ascension until you get to Havona. because you have to transcend this downstepping of spirit that you can experience in this super universe or in any of the other six. You have to transcend that on the seventh circuit of Avona and get into that relationship with unity in a more direct, undownstepped form. So it's just, it starts with that sevenfold individuation of spirit unity, and everything in that super universe with its particular facet of unity is underneath that. The matter in all seven super universes is the same, in a whole master universe is the same. So the individuality is in common, the raw, just physical individuality. But in each super universe, the unity is different. And so the associativity in between the two is different. The matter is the same in the first super universe. The unity is completely different. So the associativity, the mind in that super universe is completely different, because mind is the super additive consequence of the relationship between matter and spirit. Its associativity is the super additive consequence of the relationship between individuality and unity. No, it's just everything stems from the fact that you're starting with a different flavor of unity, if you will, a different type of unity, a different type of continuumness.
Would it be too simple to think of it like as above, so below? So we have all these different languages here, So of course, when we get up there, if we didn't have different languages here, we'd be so confounded, unbelievably mystified of what was happening. But here, at least, we're prepared.
Well, now, think about why we have all the different languages here. It's because we have these different strains of genetics. We have different expressions of individuality here. So, all of us are in the same super universe. So we have the same unity, but we have these different threads of different expressions of individuality. And so the associativity, the mind, is different. As you, your job in the local system level is to achieve that definitive individuation of yourself so that you can move up to the constellation level, to the associativity tasks ahead of you. You're going to transcend all of these initial crude, just biologic individuality differences and get in common in terms of individuality. See, so when you have the individuality harmonized, then that particular unity in this super universe produces a given associativity, and see, you're all much more of one mind. The ability to become kindred minds, increases greatly when you begin to overcome these crude genetic differences. It's going to be very hard to get anywhere near a brotherhood of man on this planet when we have such diversity biologically. Adam and Eve are supposed to create one race. See, so it's effectively like what you have when everyone leaves Gerasim. You have a common individuality, with that common unity, so that you can begin to be of kindred minds. Kindred spirits is just the potential for the brotherhood of man. The actuality requires kindred minds. Until we have one race, and then all the kindred mind things begin to manifest when you have one race. You begin to have one government, one religion, one language. See, all those mindal things, begin to manifest normally on a world. But we've got, this unblended stock. All right.
The ability to translate thought into language in the Marantia and spirit spheres is beyond mortal comprehension. Our rate of reducing thought to a permanent record can be so speeded up by the expert recorders that the equivalent of over 500,000 words or thought symbols can be registered in 1 minute of your Rancha time. These universe languages are far more replete than the speech of the evolving worlds. The concept symbols of Uversa embrace more than 1 billion characters. although the basic alphabet contains only 70 symbols. The language of Nebadon is not quite so elaborate, the basic symbols, or alphabet, being 48 in number.
Okay, a bunch of fun little pattern things in there. So for a simple, crude illustration, you notice how natural it is when they say over 500,000 words. Okay, well, you have about 1.1 million words in your answer book. Right? See, so notice that's half of that. You think about, 1 minute of your answer, time for 500,000, in other words, about 2 minutes for the entire Urantia book. Okay, and you go, well, I don't know, we've got high-speed computers and communication grids now. I mean, that's trivial. I can throw gigabytes around like nothing. No, that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about, let's say you're an author, okay, and you have a concept for a book. How long does it take you to turn that concept in your mind into a sequence of words on a page? What if that book was this book? Could you do it in 2 minutes? Yeah, that's what we're talking about. The ability to translate those quite non-linear forms into something that relative on high is linear here. As you're about to see in the next two things, there's non-linear and then there's really non-linear. For analogy, the super universe tongue, just in its simple, direct fashion, is the linearity up there. And so think about that process of taking your non-linear concept and linearizing it into the universe tongue of your versa. And gives you a little bit of a sense of how the revelators manifest the book. They've got one paper they're going to manifest. How long does it take them to download that? Like especially this one where we have an archangel, so we have to use the contact personality in order to get it to the secondary midware. I mean, how long does it take for that self-acting adjuster to pick up this paper? You're talking about very rapid transference that can go on.
Very humble.
Right. Yeah. Writing the Urantia book in 2 minutes. From concept to print,
But they did, of course.
But just, just as an analogy, just try to get you the sense, so it doesn't sound like, well, I don't, that doesn't sound very fast to me. My laptop works faster than that. Put it in the right context. It's not just simple bit communication we're talking about here. We're talking about this translation process. Oh, well, I mean, there's a logistics of, like let's say you're going to, the secondary midwares are going to write part four. Okay, they're not that different from us, and they've got a pen, and they've got to write it all down. But even this paper, at some point a midwayer had to take a pen to a paper and write all these words. That takes time. They don't have a magic pen. There's all the logistics, and then remember there's all the back and forthing going on. So, not going off on that tangent. But anyway, back to here. So, when they say, that there's a billion characters, all right, that's pretty incomprehensible. I thought there were a lot of characters in Chinese, that's really pushing it. But notice that it boils down to a basic alphabet that contains only 70 symbols. Why 70? This is the tongue of Uversa. Why are there 70 basic symbols? What's the number 70? What pattern is that? It's 10 times 7. Why? Well, you have sevenfold individuation of spirit unity, and you have the 10 different forms of individuality, the 10 different forms of physical energy. Right? I mean, it's the tenfold individuality and the sevenfold unity together, the 70-fold associativity. It's the 70-fold associativity, that fundamental 70-fold associativity. What are we talking? You know, remember how we were talking about how this is a very direct mind domain thing we're talking about here, the associativity domain, not the unity, not the spirit, not the individuality, not the matter, the associativity. See? So fundamentally, it's going to have a 70-fold. So that's pretty, immediately understandable. The fascinating thing is that when you go down to a local universe, down in the Nebadon here, that it's a multiple of 12. Remember how we talked about, the number 12 begins to be talked about, the patterns tied to 12 rather than 7 or 10 in paper 36 with the life carriers. And I didn't unpack it for you because it's very complex, but I hinted that when you do unpack the central universe, all the patterns in the central universe, you do finally figure out where the number 12 comes from. And I'll just tell you that coincidentally, you discover its intimate relationship to mind. So it's another way of having the associativity pattern manifest. And I obviously don't fully understand all of the ramifications of it being 12 down in the local universe, or in this case 4 times 12, and then you're wondering, well, is it different multiples of 12 in different local universes? You remember that Van and Amidon made an alphabet of 24 for Adam and Eve, out of the Andonite tongue. So there's 2 times 12. However, that one with the prince's staff, that one had 25. I don't understand that, so that's a curiosity. But anyway, there's lots of unanswered questions here. But the point is that you want to be striving to try to figure out why is it 70? Why is it 48? What's the pattern there? What's going on? And you can start to work on that. All right, so they have... the fact that they point out that it isn't just a billion concept symbols, which would make it seem like it's a quite definitively nonlinear thing. The fact that they tell you that it does boil down to 70 basic alphabetic, like symbols. See, that means it has some kind of fundamental linearity to it. It's obviously at a very high level, but it still is in some sense linearized. It isn't as purely nonlinear as you might imagine something being.
Well, it has to be because at a high level, they teach this to people on the world.
People way settled in the light and life, right.
So has to be linearity to it.
Right, it has to be.
To be able to do that.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask this at the beginning and then again down here. It's they call one a tongue and they call another a language, and then they're talking mm-hmm. about the speech of, and then they talk about the symbols of, which is the encoding of it. Something, what's the significance of that?
Well, I mean, to a degree, to say that the tongue of Nebadon or the language of Nebadon is a synonym. But, as I always point out, it's never because they got tired of saying language all the time, so they said tongue instead. Just think about it, the difference between saying the English tongue and the English language.
You don't need an alphabet for the tongue. If it's spoken...
Just the very fact that you say tongue reminds you that language can go from the head, from the mind, into some sort of a communicating mode, that it can be spoken. They're going to emphasize that, that issue of we don't, it isn't, this connecting mindily isn't just a passive me looking into your mind and you not doing anything. You still speak to me. It's still a tongue, even though you literally don't have a fleshy tongue and a mouth that's jiggling air molecules. it still gets spoken. It's actively projected to another being, not just passively picked up out of your mind by another being. So that's the significance of that. And you'll see, you know, that they're just about to, you know, in number three here, they're going to, you know, state that just so you go, oh, that's probably why they're saying tongue.
You always ask the question. Yeah. The
answer. Right. It's, okay, let's see. Is there anything else there? And I think that basically touches it. Okay, so now let's look at these next two. Maybe go ahead and just read, you know, two and three together, and then we'll talk about them together.
Two, concept recorders. This second group of recorders are concerned with the preservation of concept pictures, idea patterns. This is a form of permanent recording unknown on the material realms, and by this method, I could gain more knowledge in 1 hour of your time than you could gain in 100 years of perusing ordinary written language. Three, ideograph recorders. We have the equivalent of both your written and spoken word, but in preserving thought, we usually employ concept picturization and ideograph techniques. Those who preserve ideographs are able to improve 1,000-fold upon the work of the concept recorders.
Okay, so now we're up to 100,000 fold. Okay, see what the difference is. So you have, in relative terms, the linear recording. And then you have the concept recorders that are recording it in a little bit more non-linear way. And then the ideograph or ideograph, whichever way you want to say it, recorders that are doing it in a fully non-linearized way. So, you know, even a very high being with their very high mentation, you're capturing that full non-linearity, or the wholeness of that thought, without any downstepping, even into the tongue of your versa, not even downstepped that much to put it into a language-like form. But it's pure wholeness in the mind of the being is being artistically captured and recorded. Think of the artistry to capture that full wholeness of something like that. To capture the entire Urantia book in one glorious structure. You know, to see its full symmetry, you know, as a single object, you know, that you could zero in on and look at details, but to see the full beauty of it as a single object. You know, the Urantia book has that. It could be expressed like that, as a single object. That's why it has the incredible consistency that it does, because it's not a collection of parts. It's an expression of a whole. And that's what you're striving for. You're striving to go beyond reading it as a sequence of words, a collection of parts. If you can get to some level of, you know, a graph technique relationship to the revelation, you're going to begin to experience it in a more genuine, truthful way. And in that context, then you can burrow in and properly interpret a specific passage. But the endless interpretation of passages out of the book outside of the context of that whole, that's why they're so erroneous, right? It's impossible for those interpretations to be truthful when there isn't the recognition of the whole to begin with. You know, there's barely even the recognition, even though it states it directly in the book, that words are not truth. Many still think that words are truth. You know, truth cannot be expressed in words, it tells you. So it doesn't matter how many times you read the words or memorize the words, that's not truth. You've got to somehow go beyond the words to get to the truth, and then somehow to get to the fullness of the truth. You know? I mean, you know, it's hard to even imagine that this could be possible. Up front, it's like, no, that's impossible. There's no way I could ever do that. Remember what the revelators say? Yeah, that's impossible for you in and of yourself. Only hope for you is that somehow you can supply enough favorable conditions that your adjuster will help you with the thought forms. Help them to be holistic enough that you can actually resonate with the truth of this revelation. Without that help, it's hopeless. There's no way, they tell you. Right? See, so the adjuster is our only means, you know, and we're not talking about some sort of listening for the words of the adjuster in my head. You know, it's that super conscious forming that he's going to do, that tweaking, that adjusting. You earnestly form your mind like this, and imperceptible to you, he just tweaks it a little bit. He adjusts it a little bit. And then you feel a resonance like you never felt before. You go, oh, I think I understand this. And you're looking for that.
You know, it begs a question, or raises a question, that when you think of authorship, you have to ask yourself, just how artful were they, since we're talking about the celestial artisans?
Yeah.
Which raises the question, how incompetent were they? You know, were they really not able to get this across to us? Or are they really able to get it across to us in spite of ourselves?
Yeah. Yeah.
That if we apply ourselves and we make the effort, as so many of us have seen, you know, anybody who makes an effort to get this book under their belt, the least little bit, is improved.
Right. You get something. That's how masterly it's constructed. I mean, that's the amazing thing, that, you know, even a little bit of effort begins to produce some noticeable results, you know, and all you want to do is just never be satisfied with those initial experiences, positive experiences. Just know that there's potential beyond concept. Keep yourself open to endless reformation of mind. So that the next time there's even more resonance when you read that paper, instead of the same affirming resonance that you felt the first time. Ever be open to revelation, not affirmation. Don't ever let the book just become an affirmation in your mind. Let it be harshly challenging all the time. Oh my goodness, I never thought of it like that. That just completely disrupts. That is so in conflict with what I always thought. You are finding revelation, effort, struggle, conflict. That's what you're seeking so that you can continue through the eightfold process. Effort, struggle, conflict, faith. It's only in the presence of the conflict that you can begin to exercise the faith. Effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and then that thing you're looking for, progress. But you're not going to get any progress if you don't pass through conflict. It's impossible to get to progress without passing through conflict. Yeah. Revelation is found in the presence of conflict. You want it to conflict as deeply with your worldview as possible. You want it to shake your foundations. You want it to reveal to you. Yeah. Okay, so... John, yeah. Thanks, it's hard for me to keep track.
I always wondered, about when that Jesus said he's off about my Father's business, you know, and he's running the universe the same time he's down here after he's fused, but this speedy communication is kind of interesting. That I would imagine he probably was able to access.
Right, during his public ministry post-baptism, right, as Michael, you know, he can just tune in.
Right, so he could get an awful lot done when he was going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he goes off for a day, think of how much input he just took in.
And or put out.
Right, or put out, yes. Right. I see, but he still has that really tricky process of, you know, the mortal mind, you know, the adjutant Jesus mind is still just the adjutant Jesus mind, and it can't plug into that fire hose. He has to still, you know, get the little swizzle stick out and dribble something to the mortal Jesus adjutant mind, because it cannot even remotely handle that fire hose of the, you know, the cosmos. Yeah, I mean, you notice his fire hose is even bigger than creature fire hoses. I mean, you know, like they pointed out that only the gods are not fully comprehended. You know, there's two types of personalities: creatures and creators. And you know, the communication conduits that the creators plug into are so much bigger than the ones that the creatures plug into. Right. Yeah, so that mystery of mysteries of how you can have something that vast, fact of Michael, intimately juxtaposed with something so tiny, like even a, you know, the first circular, you know, essentially fused mortal, I mean, the contrast couldn't be bigger, you know. So how he doesn't blow all the circuits in Jesus, yeah.
See?
All right. Okay, just one other little thing there. You might notice one interesting little thing that they do. They could have said ideogram, you know, but they said ideograph, you know, and you know, in terms of just a dictionary, you know, they're treated as synonyms. You know, it's basically just whether or not you go back to the Greek or you bring in a more Latin expression, gram rather than graph. But you know, think about how that just that word, you know, that that word gram, how it just is related to just sort of writing. Whereas you know, we use the word graph, you know, in a to indicate a lot more than just writing. I mean, like a graph, you know, like a Cartesian plot or something like that, right? You know, a more picture-like, a much more non-linear sort of a thing is, you know, invokes in our mind when we say graph rather than gram. So, I mean, it's obviously not arbitrary.
It's a vonograph method.
Right, and they use the graph method and graph technique, you know, words, right, see? And you see, so they're synchronizing that. They're trying to encourage just what I've been saying all this time here. You know, think as non-linear as you can, as holistically as you can. When you look at one of those pictures on the wall there, you don't go to the upper left corner and rasterize it, you know, left to right, top to bottom, to input that picture into your mind. You don't input it linearly. You input it completely non-linearly. You know, you aren't just a material phenomenon. You have mind, and it can input non-linearly. You take in that whole picture all at once. You know, no computer is ever going to input that whole picture in all at once, because that computer doesn't have mind. It can only do fast linear stuff. And fast linear doesn't equal nonlinear, no matter how fast it is. Right? You know, a little speck of an insect transcends the most vast computer, as we've begun to discover, as we've tried to do artificial intelligence. And we go, wow, we've got these really fast computers that fill whole rooms. You know, they would have covered the entire surface of the Earth 40 years ago to have that much computing power. They fill a whole room now. And still, that little microscopic spider crawling across my desk is transcending my machine. How is this possible? Because that little drop of goo isn't a little drop of goo, just. It has mind seated on it. It has something transcendent of matter seated on it. And no amount of matter will ever transcend the tiniest measure of mind. Okay, now you notice that they're still preserving, though. Even when it's ideograph recorders, they're still preserving those ideographs. So we're still definitely in a preservation mode. Okay, let's keep going here.
4, promoters of oratory. This group of recorders are occupied with the task of preserving thought for reproduction by oratory. But in the language of Nebadon, we could, in a half hour's address, cover the subject matter of the entire lifetime of a Urantia mortal. Your only hope of comprehending these transactions is to pause and consider the technique of your disordered and garbled dream life, how you can, in a few seconds, traverse years of experience in these fantasies of the night season.
Oh, before we do that, I forgot to point out, picking up on, you notice in the ideograph recorders, we have the equivalent of both written and spoken word. See, you know, that's where they literally state that, you know, that why it's appropriate to call them the tongue of Uversa or the tongue of Nebadon, because they have a spoken word.
It's the matter of how many dimensions you sort of have.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, when they speak, it's in this super symphony sort of mode, but they speak nonetheless. The oratory. Now it says promoters of oratory, but then they say this group of recorders are occupied with the task of preserving thought for reproduction by oratory. So that's an interesting mystery there. Something special about recording things so that it's sort of immediately synchronized with the oratory process. You know, don't ask me to explain that. It's beyond my imagination. But you can see that, I mean, there's a whole separate group of beings that have this specialty. You know, it's radically different in some way from, say, number one. You know, but how we're supposed to understand it different is not immediately apparent.
They're not vibrating air.
Right, and they're not vibrating air molecules, right? They're not jiggling air molecules. But nonetheless, they have a spoken word, they have oratory. And just going up to the nonlinearity of the tongue of Nebadon, you know, in a half hour's address, there goes your whole life's work. the collected works of vast mind, you know, fill the blank in, whatever vast mind you want to think of, some human in history. Child's play. Yeah, little half hour oratory.
Wikipedia kind of does that. Generals do it too.
but the thing is, you know, you say sum up someone's meaningless life. Remember, that's not what we're talking about. We aren't talking about having a complete summary of the meaninglessness of someone's life. I mean, one of the reasons why it only takes a half hour is because they're only giving you that which is meaningful. Yeah. Remember, humble. You want to be a little humble right here. All right. And if the greatest mind can fit in a half hour, you know, how much would it take for them to sum up mine? I can hope maybe it'll take more than 5 minutes, but see, then they bring in and try to help you. And of course, the archangel knows he doesn't want you to go off on this tangent. Oh, wow, he's validating dream life. All of us trying to interpret dreams and whatnot. You know, no, disordered and garbled. So don't go very far with your dream life. But you know, he's just trying to point you to the fundamental nonlinearity of mind. The fact that, you know, when you aren't trying to translate thoughts down into something that can jiggle air molecules, you're just, you know, in the mind and going with it, it's a very nonlinear experience, and you aren't having to lock things to the very crude temporality, you know, sequentiality that strikes step with the material level. You can stay up in that higher sequentiality of mind. You know, and you have a dream where, you know, many, many years with all kinds of complicated experience, you know, pass through this dream, you know, and you wake up and look at the clock and you've only been asleep for half an hour. Okay, so, you know, he's just reminding you of just how fundamentally, even subconscious mind, you know, human subconscious mind is, animal origin subconscious mind is, you know, so... Yeah, I mean, that's one of the difference between truth and fact. Reflect on it in this context. Fact is, you know, is much more of a linear sort of a thing. Truth is a very nonlinear thing. Remember, the only way you can have any relationship to truth is in the upper domain of the hourglass. You know, down in that mere unspiritualized adjutant mind in the lower domain of the hourglass, and there's no direct relationship to truth. That's too nonlinear mind activity. You have to get to more nonlinear. Remember what that mind is in the upper domain. It's when you take the seven adjutants and through the seventh, they get expressed in a holistic, coordinated fashion. More as one mind, more Marantia mind-like. That's why when you copy a form in the upper domain, literally make it soul, there can be Marantia mind seated on that soul that's resonating with that. See, it's that coordinated mind, that spiritualized mind is more Marantia mind-like. The bringing together of the seven adjutants. As you go back up towards the unity, moving away from the individuality. All right, let's see. Keep going there.
The oratory of the spirit world is one of the rare treats which await you who have heard only the crude and stumbling orations of Urantia. There is harmony of music and euphony of expression in the orations of Salvington and Edentia, which are inspiring beyond description. These burning concepts are like gems of beauty in diadems of glory. But I cannot do it. I cannot convey to the human mind the breadth and depth of these realities of another world.
But I can put a lot of exclamation points down. And he is being gentle. He just said crude and stumbling rather than saying what it directly is, grotesque. Nonetheless. And then, see how he's trying to remind you that we are supposed to be thinking just like we were in group number one, the celestial musicians. There is harmony of music and euphony of expression. Well voice, euphony of expression. So it's this transcendent thing. And again, don't ever forget that the actual harmony in each one of these groups is with all seven subgroups together. It starts to get really hard to comprehend when it seems like we're talking about, you got these guys with this specialty doing that thing over there, and then these guys with this specialty doing this thing over here. How am I supposed to think about those all together somehow? It wasn't too hard to think about that with the first group, with the musicians. But now it's starting to get hard to think about. Somehow the only way that the promoters of oratory are true in their expression is in synchrony with these other six subgroups. So again, it's just like the only way that home designers and builders, are part of the whole is with all, and somehow being synchronized with all these other builders. Don't ever forget that. This is all happening in a much more associative context than we think of. When I'm speaking, I'm not speaking in any way that's sort of intimately connected to any you or anything in this room. But the higher you go, the more it's all one system. Remember the way it is on Havona. What's matter and what's being, right? What's pattern and what's personality? It's all singing together. It's all one incredible harmony. The difference between the creature and its environment begins to fade. It all becomes one cosmic system. You don't have this separateness like we all feel lonely in right now. Right? You're intimately immersed in the cosmos. Especially once you get going up above the local system level, and are definitively individuated and are something that can fully synchronize with the cosmos. Let's see. And again, it's beautiful, gems of beauty and diadems of glory. And you might even note that. This particular thing would be a gem of beauty, and you put it in the context of all seven, and you have the diadem of glory. So you think about they're even hinting at that. Yeah. All seven is the crown. Each one of the seven is a jewel, is a gem in the crown. Yeah. All right.
Five, the broadcast directors. The broadcasts of paradise, the super universes, and the local universes are under the general supervision of this group of thought conservers. They serve as censors and editors, as well as coordinators of the broadcast material, making a super universe adaptation of all paradise broadcasts and adapting and translating the broadcasts of the Ancients of Days into the individual tongues of the local universes.
Did you notice it? We had thought preservers, now we have thought conservers. See? Because it isn't being preserved, it's being conserved, it's being modified. But the truth stays whole. The fact gets definitively modified, like midwares expressing the words of Jesus in modern phraseology. The fact gets modified, but the truth stays unchanged, right? That's conservation, right? Not preservation. And you kind of get used to this when you first are exposed to universal sensors, you know, the beings called universal sensors, and thinking about a more literal sense of the word sensor. You know, when we say they serve as sensors, okay, don't think some guy with a black Sharpie, okay? Even though it's in the news these days, don't think of a guy with a black Sharpie, you know, before something is being released to the public. Right? That's not what you mean. You know, same way, the reason they call them universal censors, remember how they say they are judgment? They don't just judge, they are judgment. Right? It's in that sense, that sense of they assess in a very definitive way what's there, and know how to modify it without altering the truth that flows through it. So that no matter how much it gets downstepped, the truth comes through unchanged. But the fact is very changed by the time, especially by the time it gets all the way down to lowly levels. Right? It takes very definitive, penetrating judgment to do that. Right? Do you think you have the judgment to take the words of Jesus in Aramaic and completely rework them and still have truth flow through them? Can you discern the truth to begin with? Or can you just see the letters in Aramaic? And that's what we're talking about. Can you conserve something? Right? Yeah. Can you write a secondary work stemming from the revelation that conserves?
Well, the answer has to be yes.
Yeah, and you want to challenge yourself. See, you want to challenge yourself to do that.
Because to say no means that you can't even do what you're doing.
Right, exactly.
Because if you sit there and you decide to self-edit in the way that your words would suggest, then none of us should even bother. We should, you know, do what Joseph Campbell said quite wonderfully when he talked about the metaphor of the grass. He said, you know, if the grass growing up, you know, in the lawn would say, you know, every time a mower came by, oh, what's the use?
Right.
But in fact, we're here to make small beginnings. I mean, one of the most inspiring things ever said to me was by Clyde Bedell, mm-hmm. who was a master in the advertising realm, you know, and one of our great students. And what did he say? He said, one little phrase said, big things start small. Yeah. And what we're all about here is starting small.
Right, and that's all I was trying to get to. Starting. Notice that there aren't just thought preservers. You might remember there's a parable that Jesus taught us. The difference between those who preserved what the Master gave them and those who conserved what the Master gave them. Who buried it in the ground, preserved it, and who invested it, who conserved it, who took it forward in time, okay? They want us to do that. The book is not meant to just be quoted in that preservation mode. You need to find the courage to begin to go with the flow of truth. Okay? And that should be a little bit scary to start with, right? You've got to preserve the truth of the Revelators. So, like you're saying, you start small. Humbly recognize what a challenge you're putting in front of yourself. You know, and if you're uncertain, well, just quote. But don't just quote forever. Start to try to see if you could rephrase and have it still be true. Can you say that sentence in your own words and recognize that it's still true? Can you see the commonality between the two sentences and yet they're factually different? Challenge yourself to start doing that. Find the courage. Courageous and independent cosmic thinking. You're striving for that. All right. Okay, so I just want you to think about how initially seemingly brazen it sounds for these beings to be stepping in. It's like, okay, so I've got this broadcast coming from paradise. Well, I'm going to modify that before I hand it off. What? Right, that's what they're doing, okay? All right.
The local universe broadcast must also be modified for reception by the systems and the individual planets. The transmittal of these space reports is carefully supervised, and there is always a back registry to ensure the proper reception of every report on every world in a given circuit. These broadcast directors are technically expert in the utilization of the currents of space for all purposes of intelligence communication.
Okay, so I see. They've got to preserve this no matter how far down it gets downstepped, all the way down to individual planets. You notice that the technical issues are just as important. They have a back registry because sometimes there's things in the environment between point A and point B that muddle something up, and they want to make sure that, if they said, the word universe, it didn't turn into banana by the time it got to its destination point. Right? So, they went through that kind of a process initially with the revelation, they made sure that things were as they ought to be before they sort of, let go of it, and totally in our hands. So all of these processes, there's a potential for some corruption. For instance, when they were using the contact personality, like with this paper, it's very hard to find someone who can be that sublimely disinterested and not poke their finger in it a little bit. And so they would have been checking, there would have been some sort of a mechanism they had to make sure that what the their midwayer actually received from the archangel is what the archangel, meant that secondary midwayer to receive. All right. Let's see. Anything else in there? These broadcast directors are technically expert in the utilization of the currents of space for all purposes of intelligence communication. Okay, somehow this is part of a harmony, and it's got all of this technicality, where we would be thinking about, the resistance and whatnot and conductors and, all these sorts of things. They've got to know all of that science very, very precisely, the science of transmission and all this sort of stuff. So like we pointed out, it doesn't matter if you're talking about the celestial musicians or these guys, they all are masters of the laws, of the individuality involved before they're artists. A great artist needs to have some understanding of the material properties of paints, and canvas before they just start slapping stuff, on a board. know, how brushes, how different types of bristles for brushes and all that. You know, you've got to get into the science of all of it. You're going to be a masterly artist.
Six, the rhythm recorders. Your ancients would undoubtedly denominate these artisans poets, although their work is very different from and almost infinitely transcends your poetic productions. Rhythm is less exhausting to both Marantia and spirit beings, and so an effort is frequently made to increase efficiency as well as to augment pleasure by executing numerous functions in rhythmic form. I only wish you might be privileged to hear some of the poetic broadcasts of the Edentia assemblies and to enjoy the richness of the color and tone of the constellation geniuses who are masters of this exquisite form of self-expression and social harmonization.
So again, it sounds like almost just sort of a technical issue, but there's a whole separate group of beings devoted to just this one element of it. It's obviously extremely complex and has endless potential for improvement, and whatnot that really goes beyond our understanding. But you notice one interesting thing, see, that they're throwing in. Remember how I was saying about not thinking of individuals as so separate from the environment, thinking of it more as a system. This exquisite form of self-expression and social harmonization. Right? How it's so fundamentally a system. When you're thinking about the constellation level and that whole social development, obviously this is, they're directly stating how much this is related to that phenomenon. But of course, all of these things, all these different artisans are.
The wave.
Right.
It's very social and it's a rhythm thing. You really have to try to get with just in the rhythm of when it comes to you.
That's a great example. It's obviously a crude example, but I thought of that too. I mean, you can see look at the details, what they're saying. They seem to be talking about some sort of fascinating collective phenomenon that, very, very interesting.
You can analogize, you take that, and that's crudely what we're able to do. Or you take the Chinese, that love these placards, and everybody gets a particular little placard, and at the right time they go and they twist it one way or the other. By doing so, they show different pictures, kind of thing. But now go ahead and conflate that with the idea of a murmuration of, starlings, flying, in the sky, and imagine personal beings beginning to be able to approximate that, but going much further with many more nuances. Yeah. You begin to start to see what might be possible.
Yeah, exactly. And see, remember how we said up front, that's the whole, the Archangel said, don't just stick with the immediacy of what I'm saying because it's so crude and limited. Try to, let your imagination, flow outward and see how many other analogies you might be able to think of to get a more holistic sense of what I'm talking about. Yeah, definitely. All right, and then kind of curious again, this one.
Seven, the Marantia recorders. I am at a loss to know how to depict to the material mind the function of this important group of thought recorders assigned to the work of preserving the ensemble pictures of the various groupings of Marantia affairs and spirit transactions. Crudely illustrated, they are the group photographers of the transition worlds. They save for the future the vital scenes and associations of these progressive epochs, preserving them in the archives of the Marantia Halls of Records.
So, this very associative fact is getting preserved. All you can imagine, again, is that, it's one thing to record individualities going on, but then to record, again, some sort of much more holistic, collective expression, whatever it is. You know, he has to just kind of resort to the word marantia, you know, as a way of getting you to think of harmony and associativity and wholeness and, you know. But then, you know, it is interesting that we do have this desire to, when we have a conference, we want to take a group photo. See? You know, so we kind of have a sense that there's something more than a collection of individuals that we're trying to preserve, you know, in a record there. There's some sort of wholeness that we want to be remembered. So apparently that's a very crude, downstepped expression of something very glorious on high.
I was wondering, on this last sentence, it's talking about the archives of the Marantia Halls of Reference.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in the biblical scriptures that talk about having records in heaven or anything like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, there are certainly allusions to those sorts of things, and people, you know, extra biblically have all kinds of speculations about celestial records and whatnot. You know, that the difference is humans tend to speculate about these things in very mystical sorts of ways, very intangible sorts of ways. And, you know, here we're talking about something very literal, you know, things being recorded and stored in buildings in triplicate, you know, on spirit substance and on Marantia substance and on material substance. And, okay, so it isn't some, you know, ethereal plane. We're not talking Akashic records or something like that, right? You know, some sort of fuzzy thought. Very definitive, concrete things. You know, remember how we had the spirit halls? We pointed that out when he was talking, trying to get us, you know, at the beginning of this paper, get us to think about spirit as a literal substance instead of a feeling in our minds. You know, and he talked about spirit halls. You know, and you're going, okay, not halls that make you feel good when you walk down them. No, halls made out of spirit substance. And here again, Marantia halls. You know, made out of Marantia substance, Marantia bricks and spirit bricks. And right. So
it's hard not to use material. Yeah, trying to express that, right?
Yeah, but spirit again,
material.
They're builders, you know. So right, you know. You know, it's, you know, that's why, you know, use the philosophic term if you want, you know, substance. You know, there are two substances, three energies, and two of them are substances. Two of them can stand under. You can make a body out of material substance and spirit substance. You can't make a body out of mind because it's not a substance. You know, like they tell you in paper 30. You can't make a body out of mind energy, but you can make a body out of spirit energy and matter, you know, because they're substances. All right, let's keep going. Even more direct here. Yep.
An illustration that I thought of about these Marantia recorders.
Mm-hmm.
The movie, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, it started out with this sepia-toned picture, and they did something, they were in a bar or something.
Yeah.
It was like what you see preserved in history. And then the movie expanded into color.
Right, right, and then it morphed into
their story.
Yeah.
And then I think at the end of the movie, it went back into sepia-toned.
Right, they'll use that kind of, yeah, preservation, you know, element in movies like that, yeah. But you know, the spirit of what you're picking up on, you know, if they do that in a movie where, like, if it's a Western, you know, they'll have a little sepia snapshot, you know, of a particular frame of the movie. You know, what's the deal there? Is that just a random frame? No, there's something that transcends the frame about that frame, and that's why they put it into a still and preserved it, you know, in the sepia of the times, you know, as it were there. See, I mean, so it is in the spirit, see, of what they're talking about here. You know, you can, there, it's one thing to record, you know, the full moving picture sequence of it. Remember, we saw this with the previous, one of the previous groups. It's another to capture a still, as it were, a single image that embodies in a very transcendental way more than the moment. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they try to do that just when they, you know, if they, you're watching a DVD and you go to, you want to jump to a different part of the thing, and they give you a single image, you know, for the different blocks of the movie. You know, they try to pick an image that, oh yeah, that block of the movie, an image that reminds you, you know, of that whole block of the movie. Yeah, see, that's the idea here. All right, energy manipulators.
Section 5, the energy manipulators. These interesting and effective artisans are concerned with every kind of energy, physical, mental, and spiritual. 1, physical energy manipulators. The physical energy manipulators serve for long periods with the power directors and are experts in the manipulation and control of many phases of physical energy. They are conversant with the 3 basic currents and the 30 subsidiary energy segregations of the superuniverses. These beings are of inestimable assistance to the Marantia power supervisors of the transition world. They are the persistent students of the cosmic projections of paradise.
Yeah, it's all pretty straightforward. You know, we've talked a lot about the 10 different forms and the threefold natures. There's 30 and all that, like back when we were reading the paper about the power beings, paper 29. But notice the one little addition. You've heard me say this a number of times, and here they're speaking to it directly. Why is it that these beings are of inestimable assistance to the Marantia power supervisors? Why are artisans of this particular type? Because Marantia substance is an artificial substance. It's an art form. Right? There isn't an absolute of Marantia. There's an absolute of matter, there's an absolute of mind, there's an absolute of spirit, but there isn't an absolute of Marantia. It doesn't tie back, right, to the aisle and is sort of just natural in that sense. Right? It's an artificial substance. It's an art form. And the Marantia power supervisors need these masters of that artistry. The Marantia power supervisors aren't the artists themselves. They're just the technicians. Right? So see how they work in harmony to make Marantia substance. So that's, you know, that's the spot where you really see them speaking directly to that fact, that Marantia substance is an art form. All right?
2, mind energy manipulators. These are the experts of intercommunication between Marantia and other types of intelligent beings. This form of communication between mortals is practically non-existent on Urantia. These are the specialists who promote the ability of the ascending Marantia beings to communicate with one another, and their work embraces numerous unique adventures in intellect liaison which are far beyond my power to portray to the material mind. These artisans are the keen students of the mind circuits of the infinite spirit.
Okay. So, we've got the mind energy. Look at the little things they toss in. This form of communication between mortals is practically non-existent on Urantia. As we all know, you know, occasionally, you know, individuals can, you know, pick up, you know, mind to mind a little bit, you know, or even animals, you know, when they don't have all of the higher stuff clouding, you know, can pick up on the thoughts. They can see your fear. They're literally seeing you mindily. And so you don't look for some chemical that's floating through the air that the dog is sniffing or something. I mean, there's a much more direct, you know, mind to mind, you know, sight going on there. And so we all know there's this, you know, occasionally, but it's not practical. You can even wonder if the only reason we have it at all is because we're a decimal world and we didn't get properly blended and coordinated by Adam and Eve, and, you know, it represents these loose threads that are dangling off amongst us, right? But But when you go up to the next level, like I was saying, I mean, okay, this is the way you communicate. You don't jiggle air molecules, you communicate mindily. You know, and it's a literal energy, and you got to know all the physics of mind energy in order to be able to communicate well. You know, there's... Well, that's, you know, I mean, that's a little bit different, you know. I mean, the very fact that it involves that delicate gas chamber and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, this...
It's not practical. It's not reliable.
Right, it's just
you
right.
You can't interpret that right. You're actually...
I mean, I could spend years and years trying to get it so maybe I can properly pick up on a sentence out of your mind, or I could just ask you, you could tell me. it's not a very practical thing, you know, and it's so likely that it's going to get corrupted, you know, because at least when it's jiggling air molecules and eardrums and, you know, and tongues are moving, you know, there's some grounding in objective reality, and it's just going mind to mind, you know, where it's going from liquid to liquid and it's not having to ground itself in the substance of matter. I mean, you can, you know, I could try to pick up on one of your thoughts and it's, I could so easily, you know, morph that liquid form and hear something totally different. And, you know, so it's a very tricky thing to learn how to do this well. And then notice how they're throwing in what we, you know, we've mentioned a number of times, numerous unique adventures in intellect liaison. Remember, that's literal liaison. You know, remember how you have to work with the those who teach you etiquette when you get in here, because these energy systems, Marantia, mind, whatnot, you know, you're overlapping them. You know. And your first thought is, I want to rush up and give this person a big Marantia hug. You know, but what you're going to do is rape them. Okay? You're going to, you know, you're going to be merging, you know, and intruding upon them in a way that's effectively Marantia rape. They don't want you intermingling with them like that. You know, this is a very intimate thing. And they're talking about these are helping with, keeping everything above boards, having all kinds of interesting adventures of liaison. Yeah. Liaison is a word very purposely chosen.
Is that how you got bidwares?
Like, like sexual liaison. Remember, you know, literally, how did you get, you know, those primary midwares? It's because you had two, you know, you didn't have just little embryonic Marantia blobs, embryonic souls in those princes' staff. Those were full Marantia forms overlapping and having a literal super additive consequence. You know, they were liaising those Marantia energy systems. And so you're doing this very intimate thing. That's where the liaison word is appropriate. You know, it's sex-like, and hence it could be rape-like, and right, it has that kind of intimacy to it. But remember how, in making those primary midwares, you had the prince's staff trying all kinds of adventures of interaction. See, same spirit here. What about this position? Right, that's what we're talking about. They want you to think that literally. What happens if we put our two minds together in this way? Ooh, okay. What about like this? okay, and there's a whole artistry to that and a whole glory to that. okay, so this, you know, fun stuff when they use the word liaison. All right, so you got the physical energy, you got the literal mind energy, all the physics of the mind energy. It's got just as many equations as any, you know, physics of material energy. It's a vast, complex physics that you have to learn. And not just for those two energies, the third one too.
Three, spiritual energy manipulators. The manipulators of spiritual energy are an intriguing group. Spiritual energy acts in accordance with established laws, just as does physical energy. That is, spirit force, when studied, yields dependable deductions and can be precisely dealt with, even as can the physical energies. There are just as certain and reliable laws in the spirit world as obtained in the material realms. During the last few millions of years, many improved techniques for the intake of spiritual energy have been affected by these students of the fundamental laws of the eternal sun governing spirit energy as applied to the Maranja and other orders of celestial beings throughout the universes.
Okay, so like there's stressing, which I already have, the literalness of this, you know, and notice how they're even pointing out, you know, that when you're thinking about the laws and the physics of this substance, you know, it is a substance just like the other substance. Notice how they're pointing to material, you know, matter and spirit being very parallel as two substances. The super additivity and the laws of mind, you can imagine, are, you know, take all the complexities of the laws of matter and all the complexities of the laws of spirit substance, and then have a super additive consequence of the combining of those two, and the laws of mind must be just gigantically complex, you know, and completely different because it's a super additive, not an additive. So there's this vast physics of the threefold actuality that we have to come to learn. Now, and I reminded you of this up at the beginning. Remember what's between the lines. And during the last few million years, many improved techniques. Okay, the first celestial artisans were from where? Central Universe, Havona natives, perfect beings. Okay, beings out here, especially in recent times, as apparently the Supreme is a lot more of a holistic thing going on with the Supreme, are beginning to very definitively transcend what those perfect beings could do. Right? That's the point, remember? The perfecting domain that we live in has the potential to transcend the perfect domain. Begin to think about it in a truer form. Instead of thinking of the perfect domain and you're a benighted, downstepped expression of it, an imperfect domain, no, you are not. That is an abomination of thought. You are a perfecting domain. And the truth is, you're transcendent of the central universe. You're doing things that no Havona native could ever imagine doing, even right now, as a blob of protoplasm, you know, with an animal origin mind. There is great glory in even what we are right now. And even more so when you start to get up to higher levels and can begin to express this potential of the perfecting domain in a truer fashion, in a more complete fashion. So if that's the case, if perfecting in many ways is to be understood as above perfect, when you're going through Havona and the perfecting becomes an intimate association with the perfect, and you have a super additive consequence of the relationship between that which is perfect and that which is perfecting, and you get that which is perfected, you as a finaliter, how much even more transcendent is that of a Havona native? You can see why Havona native wants to try to be something besides a Havona native. And would like to become, you know, get into one of the finality courses. He would like to go up from where he started, the lowly place that he started, the central universe. He would like to go way up above that because there's an infinite distance above that to go. Right? See, you know, begin to see the truth of the domain we live in.
The reason it's lasting million years is because it's just, they've been working on this for trillions of years, it just been.
Right. See, again. Right. See, that the only way that can, you know, that what that speaks to is that's giving you a hint that you're beginning to see something that's going quite nonlinear in the grand, you know, in the seven super universes. There's beginning to be a manifestation of supremacy that's never been there before. That's what's going on. See, so they're giving you a little sense. There's a new expectancy in the air in the universe of universes for the last few million years. They're starting to think, you don't suppose one of these days we're going to get something completely unanticipatable like Magistan popping into existence, are we? Something very nonlinear like that that you can't even remotely predict from some additive projection sense? All right, see, the last few million years, there's excitement afoot. Something is astir. Number
so
four there.
Life is better on the mansion world
yeah.
than it was a few million years ago.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, even think about how life in this local universe is profoundly more intimate, engaging, exciting than it was prior to 2,000 years ago. Because the Creative Mother Spirit, even you, can sense her as a person now as you're ascending through the local universe. That wasn't possible before 2,000 years ago. I mean, she's much more tangibly personal now, even to lowly beings, than she was prior to him becoming a master son. You know, her reciprocal expression of him acquiring that supreme type deity, you know, he acquired something that lifted him up, and that allowed her to penetrate down more. Her personality isn't so transcendent now. It's much more down in at our level now. She comes down from supreme and more intimately into the finite. It manifests as a finite personality, a tangible personality. Just the last 2,000 years. Yeah. Our remote ancestors, you know, were going up through the local universe without that experience. And then, you know, if they haven't made it out, you know, all of a sudden one day, whoa! Right. They began to feel a whole new living personal presence that they were immersed in the local universe.
That's who you are.
Right. All right. Could finally feel mom as a person.
Four, the compound manipulators. This is the adventurous group of well-trained beings who are dedicated to the functional association of the three original phases of divine energy manifested throughout the universes as physical, mindal, and spiritual energies. These are the keen personalities who are in reality seeking to discover the universe presence of God the Supreme. For in this deity personality, there must occur the experiential unification of all grand universe divinity. And to a certain extent, these artisans have in recent times met with some success.
There it is again. In recent times, have met with some success. Okay, so four different things here. Like on the chart, threefold actuality with unity. And of course, you know, with greater specificity, what kind of unity are we talking there? Tri-unity. Right. Four different elements, like four different blocks on the chart. And notice, you know, I didn't point this out because I was waiting till here. Okay, so with, you know, item number one, you know, the group of beings number one, physical energy, okay, we're talking about that which is anchored back to the absolute of matter, the Isle of Paradise. Notice that, you know, in the second one, you're like, okay, well, anchored back to the absolute of mind. Now, notice that they didn't say the mind circuits of the conjoint actor. They're at the very end of item number two. They said the mind circuits of the infinite spirit. Yeah, you can think specifically here. Why did they do that? I mean, you know that, you know, when you say the absolute mind, capital A, capital M, you know, that's another name for the conjoint actor, the third source and center as a person. Okay, but here, we're talking about just actuality of mind energy. So they purposely use that designation for the third source and center, the infinite spirit, the impersonal designation, to remind you of that, even though technically, you know, the absolute mind, you know, is the conjoint actor, not the infinite spirit. Okay, and then they have the eternal sun. They have the absolute spirit. You know, there, when they're talking about, you know, spirit substance, item number three there. So what about the triunity? You have that threefold actuality of energy. What about the triunity? Which facet of deity directly engages reality as a triunity? Yeah. The eternal sun only engages spirit. Right. The third source and center only engages mind. The Paradise Trinity, as they tell you up in the foreword, is the only deity, the only facet of deity that directly engages reality as a triunity. Not the Father, not the Son, not Spirit, or anything else. The Paradise Trinity. Okay, and where does the spirit and personality attributes of the God the Supreme come from? Paradise Trinity. Right, notice what they're talking about here in number four. So they're talking about the triunity. Beings who are trying to actually manipulate not one of the three energies, but the triunity, them together as one, not as three parts. See, they're trying to synchronize with the Trinity more. And specifically, notice how they word this. You notice that they purposely said God the Supreme, right? Not the Supreme Being. Right? You remember how we're way in advance of paper 117 here. And so we haven't talked directly, you know, they haven't talked directly about the Universal Mother, about God the Mother. But just like in the previous paper, you know, they say God the Supreme, because they want you to think not the God the Almighty part of God the Supreme, the God the Mother part of God the Supreme. And how do you know that? The universe presence. Okay. That's where you definitely know they're not talking about the Supreme Being, they're talking about the Universal Mother, the universe presence of God the Supreme. You know, that personal purposive element. What's most definitively, you know, the personal expression of the spirit nature of the Paradise Trinity being manifest. Mother comes from the Trinity, right? That's what they're talking about. And see, and to a certain extent, these artisans have in recent times met with some success. Remember how they told you way up there with the reflective image aids, how one of the facts that those reflective images are trying to be the voice for is the Universal Mother. You know, and other facts that are very transcendent and not intimate to even very high beings in the universe of universes. These artisans are beginning to find the Universal Mother as a presence tangible. They're starting to, you know, They're putting together a triunity form, and it's resonating. It's like it's synchronizing with something that's present. And you're going, oh, that's the presence of the Universal Mother. You know, it's one thing to do something where you can feel the presence of the Creative Mother Spirit or the Reflective Mother Spirits at the super universe level, or even, you know, the Creative Mother Agencies of the Ancients of Days at the collective super universe level, but begin to do something that's so transcendently triune that it begins to resonate with the presence of the Universal Mother.
That's where they're adventurous.
Right. And you can imagine how excited they are now. How no sleep for these artists. Right? When an artist is really beginning to feel a resonance, do they want to sleep? No. All right. These artists are, you know, trillions of years they've been trying to make a form that you know, vibrated, that resonated, and it's beginning to happen. Right? See, again, something is afoot. You can literally measure it. Right? There's a growing presence of the whole.
Okay. They want to keep you from running away with that because they say, to a certain extent,
yep,
there's some success.
Right. It's not like we're quivering on the very brink of the grand universe being settled in light of life. Okay, don't overplay this, right? But it's a first definitive evidence that we might get there someday. Okay. Right? This is definitively not additive, you know, and resonates with the whole. Right, so they're excited. That's happening at the same time that you want to bemoan that you live in a world benighted by rebellion and default. Don't use your spiritual consciousness as an error and evil detector. Use it as a detector of truth, beauty, and goodness. Right now is a more divine dispensation than it's ever been before.
Don't you think there's actually, we should, in a way, celebrate because there's more potential because of that.
Right.
That we live in that world. We have more potential for growth.
That just means
we lived in that perfect, limited.
Yeah. We have that basic potential of the universe of universes. And then, you know, if you yearn for an age of the brotherhood of man and peace on earth, what if you had a catalyst the size of the grand universe that might help with that? Right. That's what you're talking about here. Something a lot bigger than the catalyst of adjusters or the Spirit of Truth or the Holy Spirit. I mean, we're talking about the literal presence of a universal mother, something that embodies the totality of the finite. Right? Now that's a catalyst. Right. Okay.
5. The transport advisors. This corps of technical advisors to the transport seraphim are most proficient in collaborating with the star students in working out routings and in otherwise assisting the chiefs of transport on the worlds of space. They are the traffic supervisors of the spheres and are present on all inhabited planets. Urantia is served by a corps of 70 transport advisors.
The challenge there is obvious. To think of them in the same way you think of a really transcendent musician, right? These guys that are charting courses.
I was thinking
about
this air
trap. Ah, see? Now that's really helpful. Right. See, Shane, as an air traffic controller, appreciates there's an artistry. Matter of fact, I know that was the great challenge that Shane faced, was beginning to synchronize with the art form and not think of it so scientifically, to begin to resonate with it more intuitively. Right? See, so yeah, you have direct experience with how this might be something more than just, well, if I use this highlighter on the map, you know, take this route here. And yet, something that's a very profound art form, you know, and resonates in another diadem of glory.
So I'm saying you're going to be shit. May take us a couple hundred million.
You'll have special.
6. The experts of communication. Urantia, likewise, is served by 12 technicians of interplanetary and interuniverse communication. These long-experienced beings are expert in the knowledge of the laws of transmittal and interference as applied to the communications of the realms. This corps is concerned with all forms of space messages except those of gravity and solitary messengers. On Urantia, much of their work must be accomplished over the Archangel circuit.
Okay. The laws of interference. Do I have to say the obvious? What a challenge to think of that in diadems of glory. But then, you know, remember way back when the solitary messengers, how they have their own, just in and of themselves, ability to communicate one to another within a range of about 100 light years. So we're not talking about that kind of stuff or the even more transcendent stuff that the gravity messengers do, but all the other communication grids. And the really fascinating thing is that last sentence doesn't say, on Urantia, all of their work must be accomplished over the Archangel circuit. Open for speculation. So even though, you know, the circuits are cut off, I mean, the first thing you might imagine is, well, even though the circuits are cut off, you know, it's not like they rolled up the sidewalks. Remember one of the things that we've talked about when we talked about those circuits, that it was the spirit controllers, not the master physical controllers, they're immediate ones that are sort of cutting off the circuit. Remember, you have a line of physical energy that's laid out by the by the physical controllers, and then a line of spirit energy that's laid out by the spirit controllers. So you have these two parallel plates, you know, with a mind energy conduit that you're going to put the communications through. You know, and they just pull back this, you know, the spirit line. You know, but everything else is still there. So, you know, you're left to wonder just, you know, what kind of background things. And then on top of it, what other even more transcendent things that, you know, they haven't told us about in the revelation might be involved. So, yeah, all kinds of speculation potential there. All right.
7, the teachers of rest. Divine rest is associated with the technique of spiritual energy intake. Marantia and spirit energy must be replenished just as certainly as physical energy, but not for the same reasons. I am perforce compelled to employ crude illustrations in my attempts to enlighten you. Nevertheless, we of the spirit world must stop our regular activities periodically and betake ourselves to suitable places of rendezvous where we enter the divine rest and thus recuperate our depleting energies.
Why don't you keep reading?
You will receive your first lessons in these matters when you reach the mansion worlds, after you have become Marantia beings and have begun to experience the technique of spirit affairs. You know of the innermost circle of Havona, and that, after the pilgrims of space have traversed the preceding circles, they must be inducted into the long and revivifying rest of paradise. This is not only a technical requirement of transit from the career of time to the service of eternity, but it is also a necessity, a form of rest required to replenish the energy losses incident to the final steps of the ascendant experience and to store reserves of spirit power for the next stage of the endless career.
Okay, let's just a little briefly on that. So again, you can just see the way they're talking. There's all of this physics, all the technical aspects of all this that are involved. The one kind of fascinating thing there is that he purposely brings in the first circuit of Havona. Remember how we mentioned up front here in this paper, we have 7 different groups, and then within each of the 7 groups, there's 7 subcategories. And that sevenfoldness is not like the sevenfold individuation of spirit unity. It's not the sevenfoldness of the 7 master spirits, the 7 super universes. It's the sevenfoldness that's orthogonal to that. It's like the sevenfoldness of the 7 circuits of Havona. That sevenfoldness in the Trinity, not, you know, inherent in the Father, Son, and Spirit. It's that other sevenfoldness. And, you know, and so you're immediately wondering, well, as I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in this paper, which way am I paralleling the 7 circuits of Havona? Seems to be a clue here, doesn't it? Looks like as I go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I'm going inward. It looks like this. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in this section is lining up with 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 circuits. Right? It's if you take one world from each of those 7 circuits, you know, you have a sevenfold pattern that you're paralleling here as you go in. He seems to be giving you a little clue there. You know, saying, notice, remember how when we talked about the rest thing, we were on the first circuit of Havona? That's not a coincidence. Yeah, he seems to be suggesting. So that would lead you to think about how physical energy manipulators would synchronize with the 7th circuit, and the mind energy manipulators would synchronize with the 6th circuit, etc. And that's the sort of thing that you can start to do when you start unpacking the patterns of the central universe. You know, it's one thing to unpack the sort of just the coarse pattern of what's the fundamental difference, the foundational difference between the 7 circuits. But when you throw in the billion worlds and all of the, you know, harmonics, as it were, you know, that obviously is beyond our comprehension. But nonetheless, you know, we've got a little hint there, it appears. Okay.
These energy manipulators also function in hundreds of other ways too numerous to catalog, such as counseling with the seraphim, cherubim and sanabim regarding the most efficient modes of energy intake and as to the maintenance of the most helpful balances of divergent forces between active cherubim and passive Sanabim. In many other ways do these experts lend assistance to Marantia and spirit creatures in their efforts to understand the divine rest, which is so essential to the effective utilization of the basic energies of space.
Okay, so again, you remember how we've seen this before, the whole bit of personalities as individuals are instruments in the symphony, how they're being played, how they play together. You can see it here again. He gives you a simple example of synchronizing a cherubim and a sanabim so that differential, manifests as a harmony and not as a cacophony. Right, so just, and how that resonates with the environment and all these various things that are so beyond our imagination. But, I'm sure that one of the reasons why he gave, use the angels as an example, because they tell you about that sort of direct way that they synchronize with an environment, how they lock on to circuits, and thinking of them in resonance with those circuits, in resonance with that sort of environmental fact, right? And so you're tuning them together and tuning them with the environment, and they work more efficiently that way. And, and that whole idea that they don't just work at peak efficiency just naturally, and they, are birthed by the creative mother spirit, but they're an evolutionary phenomenon, and they become more and more efficient as artistry matures, and that you might one day make a radical discovery of how to improve the synchrony between cherubim and sanabim, unlike any Havona native could figure out to do. Or any being that's lived for trillions and trillions of years has been able to do. Your absolutely unique personality might be just what's been missing, to look at the problem in an absolutely unique way, and make an incredible new discovery that every cherubim and sanabim will sing of you forevermore. Those sorts of thoughts. That's what's going on. It's pretty cool stuff. To really think about your personality starting to do something consequential like that. Really contributing its absolute uniqueness to the cosmos. All right, well, let's reflect on that for a moment here, everyone.